This is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today, we'll have a great show lined up for you. We'll be talking to Kurt Damier, and he's the author of Pure Food. And in the second half, we will be talking to Beth Darnell about opioid-free pain relief. But before we do that, here is Alan with the health news.
Halloween can be really scary for kids with asthma and allergies, and for their parents, unless they take precautions, an allergist advises. Keep certain common sense tips in mind as you prepare for the holiday, said Brian Martin, president of the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. In a news release, Martin said, "A little preparation can ensure your little ones don't suffer from allergic reactions or asthma attacks." To help parents prepare, he offered these tips. Masks can be scary. For kids with asthma, try to choose a costume that doesn't require a mask. Halloween makeup sometimes causes allergic reactions. Use only high-quality, hypoallergenic makeup. Skip the trick-or-treating. Parents of kids with food allergies might want to consider alternatives such as a scavenger hunt, scary movie, or Halloween party with safe treats. Be prepared for emergencies. If trick-or-treating is part of the plan, don't forget to carry a charged cell phone, emergency epinephrine, and a bag of safe treats to nibble along the way. Most childhood obesity prevention programs stress calorie counting and exercise, but one pediatrician likes to emphasize an approach called mindful eating instead. Dr. Lena Liu, a pediatrician at Seattle Children's Hospital, said mindful eating is a more compassionate and holistic way to approach healthy eating. It not only focuses on what food we eat, but on how our bodies feel. It allows us to pay attention to hunger and fullness, emotional connections to food, and the relationships involved in eating. Mindful eating focuses on positives, not negatives, Liu explained, and it requires thinking about why you eat and when. Reflect on your emotional connections to food, she said. Do you turn to food for comfort or when you're stressed? Does your child swing by the kitchen for a snack during a commercial every time they're watching TV? Better awareness of your family's eating habits allows you to think of alternatives to reaching for food when you're feeling an emotion or you're trying to unwind but aren't truly hungry, she added. Your social links with your coworkers could have a significant impact on your health, researchers say. Lead researcher Nicholas Steffens of the University of Queensland in Australia said we're less burned out and have greater well-being when our team and our organization provide us with a sense of belonging and community, when it gives us a sense of we-ness. Steffens and colleagues analyzed 58 studies that included more than 19,000 employed people in 15 countries. They found that how strongly people identified with their work colleagues or organization was associated with better health and a lower risk of burnout. The people in the studies were in a wide range of occupations, including service, health, sales, and the military. The review authors said their findings show that social relationships in the workplace, particularly the social groups people form at work, can play a major role in health at work. However, the study doesn't establish a cause and effect relationship, so don't panic if you're not in a social work environment. The findings were published recently in the journal Personality and Social Psychology Review. Industry-funded researchers say they developed a way to improve the accuracy of a standard diabetes test. Dr. John Higgins, associate professor of systems biology at Harvard Medical School in Boston, said they think their approach will enable many patients and their doctors to do a better job controlling blood sugar levels and reduce the long-term risks of heart attack, stroke, blindness, and kidney failure associated with diabetes. At issue is the HbA1c test, also known as the A1c test, which is used to diagnose diabetes. It also identifies people with prediabetes and provides insight into how well blood sugar is controlled over a 3-month period among those monitoring their disease. The A1C test measures how much sugar a person's blood cells have soaked up since the time the cells were produced, Higgins said. For the new study, Higgins and his colleagues used an advanced mathematical formula or algorithm to analyze blood sugar levels through the HbA1C test. The study appears in the October 5th issue of Science Translational Medicine.
Kurt Damier is our first guest up. He's a fourth-generation Puget Sound native, and he also has lived in New York and Seattle. He's felt passionately about authentic, full-flavored foods, free of any artificial additives or preservatives. The book he's written is, he's the author of Pure Food. In 2000, he officially made his way onto the food scene by buying a pasta company, which was a Seattle icon for over 35 years. He's opened and served as head chef at many Seattle food destinations under the Sugar Mountain umbrella. Kurt is also affecting change eating habits through Pure Food Kids Foundation. This project empowers more than 15,000 fourth and fifth grade students in Seattle and New York to make healthier food choices. So here we have Kurt with us, author of Pure Food. Welcome.
Thank you. Boy, that was quite an intro.
Yeah. So tell me about your book, Pure Food.
Well, it's actually kind of a not exactly a cookbook. It's really, the first third of it is writing, and it's essentially my pure food journey, how I came to feel about food as I do today, and also a history of the pure food movement and a kind of a pure food manifesto. And then it's followed by 75 recipes that really get you started living a pure food lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Why did you write this book?
Because the mission for my company is to change the way America eats. And so I'm writing it equally to try to convince people they should change the way they eat, and also to help people who've already decided to do so to do it.
Okay. What's your favorite recipe in this book? You've got 75 recipes. Which is your favorite?
You know, there's probably two, and one is chimichurri, and the other is a sriracha. They're both sauces, and they're condiments, especially jarred grocery store condiments, are great places for lots of bad stuff in the food additive world to hide. And so it's so easy to make your own condiments, and they're so much tastier than the commercial ones. And the benefit, of course, is that they're you know how they were made.
And they end up being more cost-effective.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you tell me about your personal food journey and how you started cutting additives from your own diet?
Well, it started probably 30 years ago. And 30 years ago, it's hard to imagine what it was like compared to today. But first of all, let's just say that everyone just trusted, right? The 30 years ago me... just trusted that our food system was going to deliver me things that were good for me. And then one day I had a bad cold, and I thought I needed some soup to make me feel better. So I went to a Chinese restaurant and had hot and sour soup. And then the next day I felt worse, so I went back and had soup for lunch again. Next day I felt worse. And this happened for 5 days, and at the end of 5 days, I felt like I had a brain tumor. Someone in my office said, hey, I described what had gone on. They said, hey, do you think that maybe you're allergic to MSG? And I hadn't ever heard of MSG, let alone ever thought that food might be bad for me. So that was how it started. And then over a period of like 10 or 15 years, I just unraveled the behind-the-scenes secret of the food world and what's really in our food.
Can you tell us a little bit about MSG and why it is put into food?
Well, MSG is a flavor enhancer. It's related to salt, but it's not the same as salt. And what it does is essentially chemically increase your mouth's ability to taste food. So it's like an amplifier for acoustic guitar versus electric guitar.
That's a good analogy. And so it's in a lot of fast food.
Well, in it or the 40 or 50 other related chemicals under different names are in tons of stuff.
Can you give us a few of those names so we can identify them?
hydrolyzed vegetable protein or all sorts of hydrolyzed proteins are all essentially MSG variants. Things like maltodextrin have similar kinds of characteristics.
Okay. So those are things to watch for, not to eat. So for folks who want to start eating pure, but they're just at the very beginnings, do you have any tips for them to get started? Watching out for MSG is certainly one of them.
Well, an MSG is really only one of thousands of food additives that are certainly not good for you. Well, first of all, of course, just read food labels. So packaged food has the government-required labeling on it. And the government-required labeling is certainly flawed. There's a lot of things that aren't required to be on there, and there's lots of things that don't require any labeling at all, like liquor. There's no requirement at all for them to tell you what's in it. And there is a lot of harmful chemicals in that kind of stuff. And then, of course, the wild, wild west is food service, where they're just barely starting to be required to tell you in certain kinds of aspects what the calorie counts are, but really no one is required to tell you what really is in the food.
Okay. So you have a family of restaurants in Seattle and New York. Do these all follow your pure eating philosophy with the ingredients used? Do you just start with real food, use real herbs and spices?
That's it, yeah. We just make food from food.
Okay.
I know that sounds kind of simple, but most restaurants, that's not the case.
Yeah, that's a rarity. I mean, you can tell the difference between when you hit a whole food restaurant and a restaurant that's using prefab food or foods that aren't real and whole. So I know when I'm eating food, I can get wonderful flavors without ever using anything synthetic, and it's hard to eat a synthetic kind of food after. So you can train your palate.
Well, your palate definitely gets trained. And so an example of that is bacon and all the nitrates that are in bacon. If you start eating non-nitrated bacon, when you go back to and take a bite of a nitrated piece of bacon, it tastes kind of metallic and a little bit awful.
Okay, yeah. So in some of the recent talks that you've given, you've discussed how Gatorade is like the new cigarette. Can you explain that? Can you tell me more about that?
Well, in order to explain that, I have to take a moment and just talk about cigarettes.
Okay.
And cigarettes, first of all, I think we probably all agree, are about the world's worst product. Anybody who's ever smoked one knows that they're pretty awful. They make you smell, they make you cough, they make you jittery, they make you a little bit nauseous, and you have to train yourself to like them. So with that kind of a start, it's hard almost today to remember that 20 years ago, about half of all American adults smoked, and smoking was institutionalized. People smoked in offices, on planes, in churches, at restaurants. In their cars with kids in them. And how did smoking become so popular, even though it was one of the world's worst products? Well, it was marketing. And originally, back in the 30s and 40s, it was health claims and endorsement by athletes and doctors.
Right.
Much like the situation with Gatorade and sugary sports drinks today.
Okay, I get it. You know, we're going to have to stop for a break, Kurt, but when we get back, we're going to talk about your work with the Pure Kids, Pure Food Kids Foundation, and the work you're doing with them. So just hang on, and we'll be right back after this break.